There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. Fresh week to work with. It's Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Hey, y'all. Sean Sullivan, live local talk over the next couple of hours. You're a big part of the show as well at 343-0106. 343-0106 gets you through on the text line or the phone line. And, you know, even if you're not calling today, you might want to put that in your contacts in your phone. Just 251-343-0106 and just save it as FM Talk 106.5. Whether you want to call in and talk to Bill Finch on a Sunday or Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty tonight on Sports Night or anything in between, you have that number. You can hit it right there in your contacts and reach out to us here at FM Talk 106.5 with all the shows that we do all week long, all the live local talk. Be something that maybe causes you to go to a text or a phone call there. So, and be part of that. All right, I want to get to the show today. Lots to do. Cameron Smith's going to join us a little bit. We will talk this allegation that's made, and will Kavanaugh head back into the Senate to be grilled some more? Will there be more questioning? We'll get into that. Also, state politics, all about Governor Ivey. We'll talk more about the story of Governor Ivey not debating and Walt Maddox out on a bus tour. He's out trying to take this bus tour through the state of Alabama and link Governor Ivey and former Governor Bentley together, using that as a tactic to link those two together as a way to keep people from either going out in the first place to vote for Governor Ivey or switching to vote for Walt Maddox. So we'll talk about that also on today's show. And I want to start off with this, though. As Governor of the state of North Carolina, Roy Cooper, had his press conference, the most recent press conference, talking about Tropical Depression Florence weakening, but the governor laying out the case for the fact that the second part of this storm is coming to the Carolinas, and that is the flooding, what it means for people getting in and out of places like Wilmington and the death toll so far.
As of this morning, North Carolina has 17 confirmed deaths due to this storm. We mourn the loss of each and every life, and our hearts go out to their friends and their family. Right now, the Black, Little, Lumber, Cape Fear, and Neuse rivers are inundated with major flooding, and 13 more rivers are forecast to reach major or moderate flood stage. Please don't make yourself someone who needs to be rescued. We've got one limited route into Wilmington, and it's being used for supplies and necessary emergency material and utility workers and law enforcement, and we don't need people going back right now, particularly when this route may disappear tonight.
So they do have the one route now into Wilmington, North Carolina, and that is how the Mobile County Sheriff's Department found their way into Wilmington to help out their New Hanover County. The team leaving yesterday morning at 6, and they had to reroute because of the flooding that is obvious in the Carolinas. They have made it to Wilmington, North Carolina, and they got through that route that the mayor just talked about. Here's a quick discussion we had with Lori Miles from the Mobile County Sheriff's Department with what they're doing in that area. This is from about 7:15 this morning. Our friend Lori Miles. Hey, Lori.
Good morning.
Morning. You told us y'all were going on Friday, said you're going to mobilize over the weekend and head up. So tell us where the vehicle is and what's going on.
Yesterday morning, they pulled out with the cook truck and a travel trailer behind it and another vehicle and had a flat tire somewhere along the way. That was at 6 a.m. yesterday morning. They arrived in Charlotte, North Carolina, had a lot of delays, a lot of road closures. So they checked into a hotel, slept, and pulling out about 9 a.m. this morning. 95 is closed, so they're going to head north up I-40 and head into New Hanover County. That's who we're corresponding with the sheriff's office there, and hopefully get set up and get ready for, you know, lunch and dinner.
And now, what about this? We had talked late last week about how folks here could help, and you wanted to kind of wait and see what was needed. Do y'all have a idea for donations or how local folks can help supply?
Well, we're still going to wait until we get there and correspond. We did have a drop-off time Saturday from 10 to 3, and a lot of people came by and brought water, and I think the JCs had some leftover hot dogs and brought those that were in the freezer. So we are packed, and we have plenty to begin with, and we'll just go from there once we get there and set up and just see what their needs are.
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
Costco donated a ton of water.
Oh, good, good. So
yeah.
And that'll be true. Once they get there and they see what they go through, more than other supplies, we'll know what
right.
we need to take. But, I mean, you're talking about New Hanover County. That's Wilmington in there, right?
Right. And, again, you know, 6 a.m., traveling all day, and they're exhausted, but they're so pumped, and they're ready to get there and help and do whatever they can to assist the community.
Well, this is going to be, I mean, I was just talking to Dr. Bill about this, and he's going to join us again in 10 minutes here, but you're going to have a tough time getting them, just physically getting them in there, because the flooding seems to have cut most of that area off.
We had the same problems in Houston, but somehow we made it through. I think the sheriff's office is going to assist us and get us in as close as possible so that we can be there for them and those first responders. What I'll try and do is maybe we do a live call in to them tomorrow morning.
Great.
With you. And then we'll do some live Facebook check-ins. We'll try and do those once in the morning and once in the afternoon.
All right. Tell folks, speaking of Facebook, where they can find y'all on Facebook.
We're on Team Sheriff Facebook, Team Sheriff Twitter, and if you'll follow us on both of those places, you'll know what's going on, and you know we'll tell the community how they can assist and help as well.
All right. Tell the crew heading in, Godspeed to them, and we'll talk to them tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Lori Miles checking in. All right. So that was from earlier this morning in our conversation with Lori Miles from the Sheriff's Department. That's probably how they're getting in there. That you heard Governor Roy Cooper talk about that one route they have in, who I think is interesting. One route that they can get supplies in right now to Wilmington and first responders, but that may not be here as of tonight. In other words, the water's rising as the rivers will now take the onslaught of rain that fell in upstate Carolinas out to the coast. Those rivers will flood and probably cause more issues, obviously, and maybe even cut Wilmington off again. So great work with Mobile County Sheriff's Department with the food truck there as they show up there to feed the first responders working those very, very long shifts in that area and helping out. So good work, and we'll keep you updated there. And of course, through our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065. All right, coming up, Cameron Smith from the R Street Institute and AL.com joins me. We'll talk about the accusations against Supreme Court nominee Judge Brett Kavanaugh and now the name Christine Blasey Ford, who has come forward in a story claiming Kavanaugh forced himself on her and tried to take her clothes off at a drunken party as teenagers in the early 1980s. Now, here's the key to this. Kavanaugh has categorically and unequivocally denied the allegation. At the same time, the other teenager that was supposed to be there, Kavanaugh's friend, Mark Judge, remember the allegation is it was Kavanaugh and a friend, and this woman said he never saw Brett act that way. So the other witness in the room, it was two of these guys and this woman, and he said it didn't happen that way. And we'll get Cameron Smith's take on it. And is this all just scoring political points, or could this affect the chance of Kavanaugh's nomination? It's all straight ahead.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
From all I can tell, Dr. Ford trusted Professor Ford wanted anonymity, and that was breached by someone who decided they should go to the media with her allegations. And that's very disappointing, but that's what happens in today's day and age. She asked for anonymity, and ironically, maybe the Republicans who are stepping forward to give her her say, she'll need to testify under oath about her recollection from 36 years ago.
All right, so there's where we stand. It's the October surprise in September, the 11th hour pitch here, and something that Senator Dianne Feinstein had been sitting on, the way I understand things, for a while now before it was brought up, and allegations made against Supreme Court nominee Judge Brett Kavanaugh, accusations made against Kavanaugh for something that happened back in the early 1980s, and coming forward, a name to go with this, Christine Blasey Ford, claiming Kavanaugh forced himself on her and tried to take her clothes off at a drunken party when they were teenagers. Some more insight on how this all works is our friend who spent a lot of time watching this in Washington, and of course back here at home. It's man who double duties, actually triple duties, R Street Institute, AL.com, and full-time Alabama fan, Cameron Smith. Hey, man.
Roll Tide, Sean.
Roll Tide. We'll get that out of the way. Yeah, that was good. That was good. Did you hear the open mic moment for Coach Saban that made it out?
I didn't.
I'll send you a link. It's exactly what you think he would be saying when you don't have a hot mic nearby, but he does. Now, I want to get into the accusations against Brett Kavanaugh. I mean, a lot of people are saying this is a lot like Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill. Is that a fair comparison?
I don't think that it's a fair comparison insofar as the type of allegations and that they're sexual in nature are similar, but we're also with Thomas, I believe it was an allegation about conduct as an adult in an employment relationship rather than in this context, which was at a party in high school, as far as I can tell.
Right, and this situation, I think, has one more leg to the stool that makes it more interesting because, you know, I'm one of those throwbacks. What I actually want to know is truth, although it seems to put you on the outs here. But there's another person there, right? As the story goes, you have three people in this room. You have Blasey, you have Kavanaugh, and you have Mark Judge, who is the friend here, who was quoted in the Weekly Standard as saying, "It's just absolutely nuts. I never saw Brett act that way. That's probably going to get fleshed out." I mean, so there is somebody else. It's not just a he said, she said.
Right, and I think this is a situation where I've actually had a number of conversations over this, and we need to really be careful. We always look at the instant context and say, oh, well, clearly, like, this is damning evidence, this is bad. Well, no. I mean, we have a situation where, first of all, this happens to come out right before a confirmation vote, which, if that doesn't send up red flags, you're not serious. Second, when a woman makes a claim about harassment or assault or anything like that, if we've learned anything lately, it's to take them seriously, that they should be listened to. That said, if a mere allegation from decades ago is sufficient, particularly when we're dealing with a juvenile, to derail a Supreme Court nomination, I would hope that the evidentiary standard is much higher. But
what I argue that is that this is not a court of law. This is, the Senate, you know, doing senatorial duties is not actually the same thing.
Sure, but I feel actually very comfortable with, hey, this information came to light. It's certainly something, I don't want to dismiss this woman as crazy or some sort of liberal plant. I mean, she may have liberal proclivities, but it's pretty serious to make that kind of allegation. And so I think that hearing from her certainly is not a bad idea. This notion that she should just be summarily dismissed, I don't think that's right. On the same note, I don't think that her allegation itself, particularly when we have not just Kavanaugh in the space when this event allegedly transpired, but have another party who's saying, no, this didn't happen. I think that, yeah, she should be heard, but we should also hear from the guy saying, I was there and this did not happen. And then senators have to make a call on a confirmation vote. I know what Chuck Schumer and others are hoping is that this is sufficient to derail Kavanaugh, get it past the midterms, maybe the Senate flips to Democrats, and then, you know, we can have a new battle. I don't see that happening here. I do see her getting to say her piece. I do see the other gentleman being able to offer up, hey, this is not what happened, and then senators making a call and casting their votes. And frankly, based on what we've seen so far, I don't think it's sufficient to change the confirmation vote for Kavanaugh.
All right, so it's just going to be wounds he receives, but he still gets confirmed. Because, I mean, there are two things in question here, right? Number one, did this happen? Did this happen as is laid out? All right, that's a fair question. Let's find out. Did this happen? And second, let's say they confirm somehow that it did happen. I'm just, y'all settle down on the text line. I'm just saying, for sake of argument, it did happen. Is this, you know, at whatever level description? If they were, is this something that keeps somebody from getting confirmed?
Well, what's interesting to me is, and this is a little bit of a wrinkle that I don't think people are thinking about, is a lot of the same senators on the judiciary that are saying, you know, if this is indeed confirmable, which, you know, that this happened this way, which frankly, I think we're sort of so far beyond being able to have any degree of certainty about what happened that it's, I don't see that as likely. But even if it did, let's just make that assumption. I know those several of those senators have said, hey, you know, what happens for somebody as a juvenile shouldn't brand them for the rest of their lives and render them incapable of doing other things. And it's important to remember that, you know, Kavanaugh has never been in any way charged with any of this. There's never been a suit against him on any of this. This is, at this point, an allegation from a person. And so to say an allegation from decades ago is enough to professionally derail somebody when it's almost impossible to confirm what actually happened, that's a scary standard that I think we should be real careful about setting, in spite of the fact that the Supreme Court is a really important court, and we want to know the character of the people that are on it.
And this may be more right if this had come up, the timeline, you know, is of question here, but this actually would go back to the things that should be discussed in the confirmation. We've gotten so far into that it takes a political bent versus is this person morally and educationally qualified for the job?
Well, what if somebody's a juvenile delinquent? Like, let's take Kavanaugh and assume that Kavanaugh had a drug conviction as a juvenile, a conviction, not just an allegation, but had a drug conviction. Let's assume that it could be anything as a juvenile. Would these same senators be saying, well, you know what? He had a conviction as a juvenile. Therefore, his whole body of professional work since that time, his whole adult life, he's stayed out of trouble and frankly been an exemplary jurist. Well, I'm sorry, but like, because you had a conviction as a juvenile, you can't be on the Supreme Court. You can't do a lot of other things. I'm not sure I'm willing to go that far, and that's for a conviction. And so an allegation, that makes me real uncomfortable.
Yeah, let me help me look through the partisan fog on this. Should I have, I mean, because I am somewhat bothered by the fact that Senator Feinstein sat on this information for that period of time that she knew, and there was this allegation, and it was only played later on in the thing. And I can't know if she was going to play it or let it just sit there if she didn't want to. But is there something there? Is there any kind of handle on that?
Well, I think that the tactical considerations are pretty obvious. And nobody wants to say that. Everybody's like, oh, well, this just happened to be when it came. No, it's not. It's absolutely not. The idea that is laughable if you believe that the timing here, I'm not talking about allegations or the substance.
No,
I'm talking
when
about
it
the
was
timing.
Played,
if you think
right.
The timing is coincidental, you're not being serious. Because if this had come out a month ago, a month and a half ago, we could have addressed it,
right.
Had hearings on it, had this dispensed with, and been cruising along to a vote.
Yeah, if you believe it's true, right, if you believe it's true, and you believe it is, you know, that this is true, and the American people, and therefore through their representatives, are going to say no to this person, you would have played it out early so it could you know, reach its full zenith before a vote was taken, correct?
Yeah, I mean, this is basically a last minute, let's throw the wrench in here and see if we can derail this thing and say, well, we don't have time before the October break. We don't have time before midterms. Let's try to, like, jam up the works. I think it's fair to hear her out. I think it's fair to schedule it very quickly for her to talk, for the other person in the room to talk, and Judge Kavanaugh have an ability to respond. And we can do that in a very short time frame. Apparently, she's expressed a willingness to testify. And
that's good.
We need to hear that out and move on.
Absolutely. Coming right back, more with Cameron Smith with the R Street Institute and AL.com. And Bobby asking a question on the text line that we had talked about this some this morning, Bobby, and I know a lot of people have been asking. You're trying to make this a corollary between what happened here in the senatorial special with Roy Moore and Doug Jones. And is it? Because Bobby says, here, Cameron, he says, it worked against Roy Moore, why not try again? We'll let you answer that when we get back. Check in with Dr. Bill, news headlines, and then we're right back. This is Midday Mobile, Monday style. Glad to have you here.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. My buddy Cameron Smith, AL.com, R Street Institute, hanging out with us and talking about the latest news out of Washington. Well, gosh, there's a whole bunch of it, but specifically allegations, accusations made against Supreme Court nominee Judge Brett Kavanaugh, and this coming from Christine Blasey Ford, who came forward in a story in the Washington Post claiming Kavanaugh forced himself on her, tried to take off her clothes at a drunken party as teenagers back in the early 1980s. Kavanaugh has denied this and now has a friend who was also in this scenario laid out in the room who is denying it as well. So there is a little bit of a wrinkle here, Cameron, where it's not the just the he said, she said. It's actually there is another person. I don't know if that would be a supporting witness. I don't know how you qualify them, but there's somebody else in the room.
Well, and senators have the choice here of saying, well, okay, so here's an allegation. This goes to character and fitness, which is a fair criteria. I mean, obviously, we want to know that Supreme Court justices have the character and fitness to do the job. This is not a criminal proceeding. It's not a civil proceeding. It's a political one. And senators have to look at the information and say, hey, is Kavanaugh a person of character who's a good jurist who will do a good job on the Supreme Court? If the answer is yes, they should support him. And if the answer is no, then they shouldn't. And that's a judgment call. Mm-hmm. And if they get it wrong, voters hold them accountable. The idea that, you know, any senator here should be villainized for looking at the information and voting one way or another is kind of ridiculous, because this is, again, happening so long ago, but there's also the question of what kind of standards are we creating here? If the allegation of criminal conduct against a witness saying this did not happen, if that's enough to scuttle these things, I've got some real concerns as to that standard being the one that we're going to apply, because think about you and I at the break talked about drunk driving.
Yeah.
You know, is the allegation of, hey, I saw somebody drinking way too much, they got in the car, they endangered lives. Let's assume all of that is true. Okay. You know, if they did that in high school, if they did that in college, is that enough to say, no, for the rest of your life, you can't be at a high-level position? I'm not sure about that. And, I mean, even if you know, this is a situation where but let's assume that it happened as is indicated and it's clearly criminal and it wasn't out there, it's still a juvenile proceeding. You know, does a juvenile conviction even for this type of thing preclude someone for the rest of their life being on a high-level court or something like that? I'm not sure that's a conclusion we want to reach. I understand that it's politically convenient and expedient for Democrats right now, but, you know, what if this is somebody who, you know, is a Democratic nominee and there's a similar allegation? Are we all of a sudden going to say, okay, this is consistent, this is how we treat this? If this is an allegation, then sorry, you're done.
That's why I think Blasey needs to be, she absolutely needs to be heard and testify. We need to get facts and clarity here. But yes, when it turns into accusations, and especially accusations when somebody's a juvenile, what we have to ask that question. I think you're making a fair statement. Ask a question as a country, is that, and y'all get your partisan blinders off for a second, just anybody being nominated to office, is that a standard? Or which things would disqualify somebody, which things wouldn't? And back to Bobby's question before the break came in on the text line, said this worked against Roy Moore, why not try it again? Do you think this is? Do you think there's an analog here?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that worked against Roy Moore. I mean, the notion that that was what sunk his candidacy, I'm not sure that that's entirely fair. I mean, there were a lot of dynamics there, but obviously it had a real impact. And yeah, unfortunately, welcome to new politics. Welcome to where we are right now as a country where we don't care. You know, this is, I mean, if you think this is a smear, look at the rest of the hearing against Kavanaugh. And I say against on purpose. I mean, trying to make him out like he is some kind of, like, villain is ridiculous and inappropriate, because that's simply not what's presented by the evidence. Watching Democrats, like, strategically cut up clips to make him look like some kind of monster when he just disagrees with some of their viewpoints, that's where we are right now. I mean, Republicans do the same thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't a single-party thing. I mean, but that's how we're acting, is if we can villainize the other side, we can make them dangerous and scary, and they're going to hurt you and hurt your children and your future livelihood, then, you know, we're winning. I think we're tearing our country apart with this kind of behavior. And frankly, I agree with the sentiment of drain the swamp. I'd flush the whole thing and start over.
Well, yeah, the problem is then you got to load it with new people, and I think in 4, 8, 12 years, you might see the same kind of wetland be created. But that's just my cynical theory. I think the swamp comes from the people over time, not a swamp that corrupts the people. But
I don't disagree with the, hey, would we get back there? I think the thing that we need to get back to is these are people who engage in public service, not forever public servants. And I think the career politician creates a lot of challenges for our country. And the only way that I see that we can really make some of those changes is we have to make Washington matter less. If we can do that, then okay, we can have politicians who do this as more of a civic pastime. But this notion of, hey, this is a job, you can do this for several decades, that's concerning to me, frankly.
All right. Well, speaking of the Washington swamp and the hits, let's bring it back home here for a second. And reading through John Sharp's story over at AL.com and a discussion headline here, in the Alabama governor's race, Walt Maddox banks on voters recognizing a link between Ivy and Bentley. So that's the latest plank in the platform here for Maddox is Ivy, just the connect, everybody we can connect. I know they're coming after Steve Marshall as well on this, but any connection you can make. I think the one between Ivy, you can make one argument with Marshall. Ivy takes the job because that's what the lieutenant governor does. I mean,
well, it's a conspiracy, Sean. I mean, that lieutenant governor, I mean, she should have just stepped and said, no, I'm not going to take this. I mean,
he doesn't offer her the job.
I mean, like, you know, we know what's happening here. Ivy's ahead, and Ivy's basically like, I'm going to win this. I'm not going to play your silly patty cake game. And that's the play. I don't like it. I mean, I've been very clear about it. I'd love to see her debate Maddox, show what she's got.
Yep.
Maddox would love that. She's not going to do that. She's made that clear. And if the voters of Alabama say, well, that's enough for us to vote for Maddox, great. But I think, unfortunately, what's happened here is Maddox is continuing to grasp at straws. You know, liberal folks who want to see, and I should say liberal folks, Democrats who want to see Maddox elected or continuing to kind of make these same arguments. But I just don't see it. I think he's going to have a really, really tough time. Ivy's making no unforced errors. And the bottom line is, if the majority of Alabama's voters have to look at it, even if Ivy doesn't show up, even if she isn't all there, like, assume a lot of the stuff that's being circulated around, they'd still rather have her than have a Democrat who seems to be, more in the Washington vein of Democrat than is I think, consistent with the majority of Alabama. And that's kind of just the long and short of it. I know that's, you know, disappointing to Maddox, but I just don't see a path forward for him right now, and I haven't seen one for a while.
Yeah, I could jump in on that, too. That, I mean, I've said the same thing from what I do for a living, just as a citizen. I like debates. I like to see that. I would like to see Governor Ivey debate. But let me go back to the beginning of this and point out, folks, if wherever you are on the political spectrum, if you hear the argument made that Governor Ivey is connected to Bentley because she became governor when Bentley left, Bentley did not make that decision. The state constitution, the bylaws of our state, is why she became governor. I mean, can't somebody at a Maddox event just step up and say, help me here, because I'm looking at my No Alabama book from seventh grade or whatever it is, and that's not how it works.
No, I mean, if I were advising Maddox, I'd try to tie her to, like, LSU or something like that. I mean, that's got a better chance of working than trying to tie her to Bentley. I mean, don't get me wrong. Bentley's unpopular, and he is an anchor, and he serves
yes,
as an anchor
but
for
it's not accurate.
Strange and
but
other
it's,
folks, but, like, this one just doesn't make any sense
right,
to me.
It's not accurate. I agree with you. If you can find some back channel and tie people together, believe me, if I'm a political advisor, I'm going there all day long. But in this case, it just is not true.
If you're going to go with something that's kind of like skirting the truth, I mean, say, well, I saw her eating corn dogs and drinking Jack Daniels with Les Miles. And then, man, now Maddox is definitely going to get like 5-10 points. But this notion of, well, basically Bentley, I mean, she's got public statements. She's talked about, she's reversed some of Bentley's policies. She's done a lot to basically separate herself from Bentley, and the notion that, like, ooh, the stain runs deep. Well, if that's the standard, then, I mean, everyone in government, everyone who talked to Bentley who's a Republican, I mean, Maddox is spinning right now. He's going to keep spinning. And the problem is that Ivy's like everyone's favorite grandmother. I've written that. That's where we are, and Maddox trying to attack her makes him look angry. That dog does not hunt in Alabama, and he is going to have a very tough time.
But even if it was an incredibly unlikable person that was the Republican candidate for governor, I'm not saying they were bad for the job, but they were just unlikable or whatever, I would still point out that the way it works is when the governor has to leave, the lieutenant governor steps into that position. That's not a political thing.
No, but I don't think that... I mean, look, you and I have both been around this long enough to know that if the standard was like rational thought and process... we'd be a lot better off, but the idea of, you know, we just got to tie her to Bentley. This is the process that happened, and we can make it sound kind of scary and sinister with, you know, some black on white graphics and some like eerie music. Like,
right.
I know people that do that for a living, and I know that they would think that that's certainly something worth doing. And then you're pointing out, well, you know, that's eighth grade like civics type stuff. And they're like, yeah, but it's really scary. And that's unfortunately where we are in politics right now. So
shaking my head.
Exciting.
Oh, man. There he is, Cameron Smith, R Street Institute and AL.com. People want to impugn you with non-factual accusations. Where do they go?
You can go to @DCameronSmith on Twitter. I appreciate black and white graphics with scary music. That really gets me moving. Or you can find me at al.com/opinion, and we can have some conversation.
Great stuff, Cameron. We're coming right back. More Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
But y'all get what my beef is there with that? It's not even a discussion of political bent. I'd love to hear from Maddox supporters that understand what I'm saying here. It's not even, it's just like, if you're gonna go after Kay Ivey, trying to link her to disgraced former Governor Robert Bentley, because she took over the position, that's not... Bentley didn't decide that. The The Constitution decides that. When I heard that, I said, have we gotten this silly? Have we really gotten this silly? You know, something else that Cameron mentioned, I think this is, we have put this in the, put the peat moss down and water it and see if this seed will grow to a conversation going forward. And that is, will Alabama be an experiment for pulling back the Democrat Party from where it is now, as far as it's gone into the left? You know, and you can say, hey, you could have those critiques on the right too, but I'm going to have this one on the left. Meaning, I've been paying attention to a couple of Democrats running in the state of Alabama that are not getting all the attention, and they're running more of a moderate Democrat platform. One that is one I still don't think in this day and age wins in Alabama, but it has a lot better chance than signing on to. It's the question Doug Jones has. If Doug Jones, I go back to this, that if Doug Jones doesn't think he can win when he runs for the Senate seat, then you'll see that behavior in going far left. If he thinks he can win, you think he might moderate. Why? Because the vote getter in Alabama for a Democrat, I think, would be a moderate version of what the national party is going with. But the question is, will there be success for people like that in the state of Alabama? Will that resonate? Of course it won't resonate in California or New York, but elsewhere. Do the Democrats say, okay, well, how do we regain the Rust Belt states that we got our butts whipped by Trump in? How do we go back to those places where Democrats used to go, well, okay, well, here's a version, right? Here's a version of that. Is that gonna be successful? And does that come? Is the laboratory for that? Is that right here in Alabama? We'll see. But yeah, saying that you sign on to national Democrat politics, I don't think. Sure, there's a certain percentage of our population. It's not insignificant. There's a certain population in Alabama of Democrats that will love everything that comes out of the national level. You can't go far enough left, as there are people that you can't go far enough right. There, but do they make up the number of people you need to show up in November to win? Yeah, I think that's up for debate. We can take some calls on that at 343-0106. Oh, and speaking of debate, this one coming, and if you can look at this as a pundit, you can look at this as just a pragmatist. If you look at it as a armchair quarterback in the world of politics, I see this one as a very interesting case to come. Just like I told you, that Roundup case was going to be an interesting case to come. Here's another one. I mentioned it about a month ago. Now some more information from the AP on this. Coleman County Schools, so up north of Birmingham, Coleman County Schools has voted to put "In God We Trust" on their school buildings, okay? The Coleman Times reports the Coleman County School Board on Thursday unanimously approved a resolution to display the motto at all county schools, okay? In God We Trust. The action comes after the Alabama legislature voted to allow the motto's use on schools, courthouses, and other public property. Superintendent Shane Barnett told the newspaper that some people may disagree with it, quote, but the legislature voted to allow it, end quote. Barnett said, it's important for the students to know the nation's history. Now, Brock Boone, an attorney for the ACLU of Alabama, said the school board's actions could make people of a different faith or who are not religious feel alienated. I'll let you go ahead and fill in. You're going to fill in the other part, right? The easy one. You'll take the layup, take the short putt. Right. In God We Trust is, let me pull out. Oh, they left me a dollar in my wallet. Okay. So, okay. There's all the symbols that lead to the Nicolas Cage movies. And, oh, yeah, there it is. In God We Trust. Right there on the $1 bill. In God We Trust. Now, I don't hear people, when you hand them cash, go, I'm really feeling alienated by that cash, because at which point said, well, then I'll take it back. I'll vendor lien that dollar, take it back. But they are, so if the ACLU goes after this, I think this is going to be an interesting court case, because it says In God We Trust. It does not say, and by the way, it says people of a different faith. Well, if they're I guess if they believe in many gods, polytheist, right? If they're polytheist, then, no, that'd be multiple religions. What is it? Polydeity? Poly, what is it? Pollyanna? Polymona? Many, polygod? Polydeity? I guess it would be polydeity, right? If they're polydeity, maybe the singular nature of in God we trust might bother them. Other religions that are monotheist, they can just take it to mean their God. And those who are not religious might feel alienated. If they're going to go after this, they're going to go after this. I mean, this is going to be a federal story, right? I mean, in God we trust is something that, I mean, think about the number. If they go after Coleman County schools, how big of a Megillah are they going after here? I think it was an interesting play by the state legislature, number one, to pass that. I mean, this is the stuff that they're passing when they should be passing budgetary moves and all. But nevertheless, that and tanning beds and regulating payday loans and all the stuff they like to do. But then they do that, they pass these kind of laws. But the play there from them passing it through the legislature and it now getting signed off on, it's law, and then Coleman County Schools making a move to put in God We Trust, I think it's going to be a fool's errand for the ACLU. It sounds like they're interested in pursuing this, pursuing a case here, but I gotta think they don't win this one. What do you think? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more when we come back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile. The digits, 343-0106. Website, fmtalk1065.com. Find me directly on the Twitters at fmtalk1065. Also, facebook.com/fmtalk1065. We will be right back.